Hello, and thank you for joining me for the second episode in our special series of podcasts spotlighting the Arizona Institutes for Resilience and their work with individuals, businesses, and communities to manage risks associated with climate change and discover opportunities associated with solving the climate crisis. Water, one of the most precious resources on our planet, is taken for granted so quickly by so many. 1 in 3 of the Navajo do not have a sink or a toilet in their home. Navajos are 67 times more likely than other Americans to live without running water or a toilet. This is the story of two passionate women establishing a powerful partnership to collaborate resources and bring safe water to thousands of people in the Navajo Nation daily, especially in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. And oh, they just happen to be sisters. I'm Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Impact Earth. It would be really hard for me to articulate the importance of what we are going to be discussing with our guests. The Navajo Nation and clean water, the story of two sisters, literally. With me to educate all of us about the current reality around water and the Navajo Nation are Crystal Tule Cordova and Nikki Tule. And I would like to share a little bit more than I normally do about their journeys because it's such an important part of how they got to be here and what they're going to be sharing with us as it relates to their work. Crystal is a principal hydrologist in the Navajo Nation Department of Water Resources, Water Management Branch. She is an enrolled member of the Navajo Nation. She has worked collaboratively with Navajo Nation partners on water-related research since 2013. Crystal received a doctoral degree in geology and interdisciplinary graduate certificate in sustainability from the University of Utah. She received a Master of Water Resources in Hydroscience and a Bachelor of Science in Earth and Planetary Sciences from the University of New Mexico. She is also a member of the Water Solutions Network, Cohort 3. Nikki Tule is also a member of the Navajo Nation. She is a third-year PhD student in the Department of Environmental Science with a concentration in hydroscience at the University of Arizona. Her research focuses on ensuring people living in indigenous communities have access to clean drinking water to sustain their way of life in an ever-changing environment through sustainable practices and water policies and management. And I want to read a quote. When I was doing my research for the call, this is a quote that I read that someone wrote about Nikki. Inspired by her family and traditional upbringing on the Navajo Nation, PhD student Nikki Tule dedicates her life to restoring balance and tackling water insecurities among indigenous communities by studying to be one of only a few female hydrologists in the world. So Nikki and Crystal, I am truly honored to have you with me for this next hour, and I want to thank you for being here. So a warm welcome from me to you.
Thank you, Gina.
I just hope this is just an amazing, great conversation. It doesn't feel anything like an interview because you have such really powerful stories to tell, and this is a big one, about how your paths, you showed up in the world to make a big difference when it comes to really creating the world we wish to see every single day. So two women, Native Americans, PhDs. Would one of you like to take on how rare that makes the two of you? Like, what are the statistics on Native Americans with PhDs and your STEM PhDs and your water scientist PhDs, and the beat goes on. So I'd love each of you to just talk about the phenomenon of that and honor it.
Thank you, Gina. It's important to be able to understand that when we think about the total population in the United States of the Native American population, it's less than 1%. And when we think about the population of students that have graduated with high school degrees, they are lower in percentage. But when we think about graduate degrees with PhDs, particularly in science, there is a number that is less than that. At the institution that I went to school at, the University of Utah, I was one of the only students of color that was in the college that had my background. And as a Native American in the college that I was in, even to be the only Native American in a PhD. And it's important to be able to understand that that in itself is a challenge, because when you are going through school, having a mentor that looks like you is important. It's not just about looks, but it's also about the identity of where you come from and how far you've come to be where you are at today, especially when we think about the historical path of Native Americans and thinking about our tribe in particular, about the history related to Huelde, also known as the forced removal to Fort Sumner in before 1868, in which our treaty was signed. But even after the treaty was signed of 1868 and our people returned to their homelands, to the Four Corners region of the United States and southwestern region, it's important to be able to understand that continued challenges remained with assimilation through boarding schools, being able to forced assimilation that stripped the language, or at least tried to be able to do that, and our identity associated with that. And so when you think about that relationship with education and how far we've come from then, it's important to understand the value of the change, 180 degrees from one direction to the other, to be able to be in a different place of embracing education, to realize that it can be able to be a tool to help our people to be where we would like to be and develop the homeland that we would like to see, not only for current, but also for the future.
I just want everybody to press pause and let that sink in, of all of the nuances and history and the interweaving of this story and this journey. Because to me, I'm sitting here and I'm kind of going, bam, 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 there's another one. And here you sit talking with me, having your PhD. So I know that was crystal. Nikki, do you have anything that you want to add to that?
Yeah, so I am a person who has always been fascinated with numbers. And so to go back to your question about the statistics relating to PhDs, but more specifically STEM and science and engineering PhDs within the STEM fields, I was looking at some statistics recently, and since the early 2000s, STEM PhDs who are Native American have never taught more than 150. And so Crystal and I, being two of those PhDs, Crystal already finished and me on my way to being finished, if we take two and we take a percentage of the 2019 statistic of 130, we're about sitting about 1.5% of the total PhDs that are recognized for the statistics that were given that year for PhDs. And so that's just another way of looking at answering that question you posed about just kind of how unique this circumstance is.
So that's mind-blowing to me, and everybody loves numbers. It's like, good. So there's that piece that I so appreciate. And I want to talk about, or have you talk about, life on the reservation as it relates to your journey for the water. But before we go there, can each of you share a little bit about the environment and the support that you were given to get you to even out of high school and into college? I mean, go into the background of that, because it's an impressive statistic.
Thinking about, you know, the field that we are in and the environment in which we grew up, we had a close connection with the land. Native American people in general tend to have that. There's a very close connection not only with their surrounding of the land, the rocks, the water, the plants, but also the animals. And it's important to have that understanding of how each creature relates to water and is interested in water. My journey in water started with a fourth grade science project with 2-liter bottles and a filtration system. It was an amazing opportunity to be able to to get over my nerves. I was an introvert. I was a very shy individual. If I got in front of a crowd of people, it was very hard for me to be able to get my point across. And even with science fair judges, although it may just be two at a time, it was very terrifying for me. But somehow I managed to pass that first step and represent my school at the American Indian Science and Engineering Society Science Fair in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It was a very exciting time and very exciting at the corner of two streets in Albuquerque where we were told that our vehicle was catching on fire that we were in. So, I mean, even just that alone and trying to save our other students' mouse for their project was a little amazing. And, you know, I am where I am because of the support of people. You know, ever since I was in elementary school, my Head Start teacher as well, and then going on to middle school and high school. But like any student, I did have teachers that were very supportive and helping me reach my goals. And then I had opportunities where people didn't believe in me and thought I'd just be another statistic of living on the reservation, not making it to college. Although I was fourth in my graduating class and had the potential to do that, there were individuals who didn't have that support for me. But nonetheless, the environment for which I grew up with, the household, including my mother and father, but also including my maternal grandmother, my maternal grandfather, and my aunts and uncles and cousins, provided that environment and that supportive network that continued to support me through my undergraduate career, my master's, and then onto my PhD.
You know, it is really mind-blowing, and to have those people, and the word you use, very conscious of word steward, is, you know, and then I had opportunities where people told me that I couldn't make it and, you know, basically beat you down. So you're like a poster child for resilience, and I'm sure Nikki will share some of that same thing, because in spite of that, you just got up and moved forward, and you saw it as an opportunity or a challenge to be overcome, and that just kind of blows me away. And I guarantee you, no one ever told me that in my life. And I didn't have all those obstacles. So it's just so impactful to me to even hear it. So Nikki, what about you? How about your journey? And I guess I have to ask, was your big sister, your older sister, did that influence your path? Or are you, you know, did it help? Because I hear that part about role models. And so tell us your part of the story on your journey to where you are, which is finishing up your PhD.
So as we know, coming from the same family and being siblings, we can all have very different personalities. And so I would feel that my personality and kind of characteristics were a little bit opposite from Crystal. I wasn't necessarily the introvert, although that has now changed being in a PhD program. But I was, I guess, a person who really was drawn near to people. And I feel like my journey and upbringing has everything to do with where I come from and where Crystal and I were both raised and our families. One unique characteristic that I know differs highly from households from where we're from is that our father never allowed us to have a TV in our home. So we didn't have a television. We had a TV, but we didn't have television. And so what that meant is that we didn't have hundreds of channels to stream from to watch TV and to watch shows. But what he did allow and what he did encourage was that he would buy us books, and or we could get books from wherever we wanted. Sometimes people from the outside NGOs would bring books to the reservation to distribute, and somehow I'd get my hand on a book that way. And so that was one distinct characteristic that I realized was different from households, was that factor of not having a television in the home, but being encouraged to read. Secondly, is that I've always loved the outdoors. And growing up in the country, in this area of the Navajo Reservation where we grew up, I was constantly outdoors. And so myself and a couple of other cousins and my younger sister, so you're meeting two of my two sisters, but we have a third sister. And so my younger sister and I, we would always be outside playing or looking at the plants, looking at the different types of rocks. And at the time, as a child growing up, I didn't realize what I was looking at was topics that could be associated with geomorphology, geology, hydrology, biology, like all of these scientific areas of focus. I didn't realize that some of those qualities of just growing and living on the reservation was associated to this. And even to the point of where we would butcher sheep to create a meal, to create the meat coming from the sheep, mutton, I didn't realize that that act alone was a form of understanding a system of anatomy. And so it was just all of these little things that sort of chained together to create this link that would ultimately lead me to this path of becoming a scientist. And like Crystal had mentioned, our grandmothers played a really big role in that as well with our mother and our father. We come from a matrilineal society. And so what that means is that we're really driven by the strong women in our family who serves as a pillar. And so you asked that question about a role model. Well, my role models have always been my grandmothers. And why was that? Well, it was their form of resiliency that transferred onto us. Our grandmothers did not have the opportunity to reach this level of education that we are at now. In fact, it wasn't even afforded to them to be a possible opportunity for them. But what they taught me was something that I could never, ever learn in a structured school system. And that was this structure of hard work, the structure of never giving up, the structure of learning to be true to who you are, and to also to never forget where we come from. And I think that's really key into the work that we do now, that no matter how far we go in this Western educational system, it's that connection and that tie to that what is often deemed as traditional ecological knowledge, and also that teaching alone, but the love for our family, our land, and our community is what brings all of that together and draws us back home to where we were born and raised.
Just another opportunity for me to say to everybody who's listening, just press pause and let what Nikki just said sink in. And Nikki, let's segue. We'll take you on for this question, since you're right here. Talk a little bit more about your relationship with water. I don't know if you lived without indoor water access, or if you, I'm sure you saw firsthand, even if you did have water. So what was your relationship with water, you know, with your life on the reservation?
Yeah, so that question can be answered by looking at the first days of when I was born. So when I was born at the age of 2 weeks old, my father brought me back home to the reservation to help me be raised with my grandmothers. And that act alone just showed us the importance of education in our nuclear household. So when I was born, my father brought me back home to the reservation with Crystal, my older sister, to allow my mother to finish her graduate work at the University of Utah, where Crystal went. So my mother stayed in school, but the finances got too difficult for a young family with two kids. And so that decision was made that my father would bring us back home to live with my grandmother. And so this was my maternal grandmother, as the stories are told. And so in moving back home with our maternal grandmother, that household that I was first brought back to when I was born was a house that had no running water. And so for the next few years, living in that house, Crystal and I were brought up and raised in that home. And so we were able to experience firsthand just what a household without running water was like. And they say often that the first 3 years of an individual's life really forms the person of who they are. And I really feel that is very true and holds a valid point, because in those first 3 years of my life and having that experience to live without water in a household, to this day, I am very conscientious about how to conserve water. And that is maybe not necessarily by choice or always by a conscious choice, but just by a choice that has come by experience of living without water in a household. And so by making these trips to the water well to get water, by understanding how to create a water budget for your household, by understanding just the hard work, literally physical labor to go in a vehicle and to carry these 55-gallon barrels and roll them around off of trucks and back onto trucks, into your house, out of your house, it creates a large task that takes up a good chunk of your time when that is a resource that you need. And so having that experience early on in my life, I've never forgotten. And I think it is because that's a small fraction of the reason that has led me to enter more into this whole world of hydroscience, of not only ensuring water access, but also to speak of water quality, that is important to have in households, and to understand the difficulties that comes when you don't have that access to water, but even more so when you don't have access to water of quality. And I think that is what continues to drive me to this day to help those who do not have the option or the availability currently to have water in their homes.
Another great answer. And Crystal, what would you like to add or chime in to that in terms of your journey?
Some of my earliest childhood memories, I see a silver tub on the table. I see a pot of water being heated up on the stove for a bath to be able to take. And I also remember walking in a cold night to the outhouse to be able to use the restroom and come back. And as Nikki said, those were early years of our life. And those early years of our life have left an impression on us for a long time. And I mean, even growing our food, carrying a bucket with my grandfather and using a cup to water the beans, the watermelon, the corn, the squash, to be able to have a sustainability in our life through self-reliance. Those are important factors in which those impressions at a very young age have drawn upon us. I was about 2 or 3 at that time, but having that relationship of not having running water and being able to drive my goals these days of being able to provide. I mean, it's 2021 and there are still, depending on who you might ask, and 30 to 40% of Navajo Nation of people don't have pipe water. That's a large percentage in the United States, and it's important that we continue to decrease that number, especially in a time of pandemic when the CDC guidelines have suggested that you wash your hands for 20 seconds. When you live in a household that doesn't have running water, that means changing out that water that you would normally reuse in the wash pan to get rid of that again. It means more trips for water hauling. Resources are already tight with a pandemic and, you know, people throughout the Navajo Nation not having the jobs that they've had before because of the restrictions and the spread of COVID-19, especially on the Navajo Nation. The first wave wasn't as bad as the second wave. The second wave has been far more worse. And it's important to be able to understand how we can be able to address these issues. There has been funding through the United States, through the CARES Act funding to be able to address these issues. But there are still large gaps in which, you know, there's water infrastructure challenges on the Navajo Nation. There are water quality challenges associated with abandoned uranium mines, also brackish water issues related to salination and the southwestern portion of the Navajo Nation. There continues to be some production issues related to the hydrologic and geologic interactions and where these wells are located, also related to climate change impacts on more shallow aquifer systems. So it's important to be able to understand that when we think about water, I'm sure there's many listeners today that didn't wake up without taking a shower, brushing your teeth, eating a meal, or maybe you drink coffee. Maybe you're a vegan, maybe you're a vegetarian, or maybe you like to enjoy a steak now and then. No matter what you think about, you know, your nutrition, you are what you eat or what you drink. Isotopically, when we think about water, those are all imprinted on us. When you really sit there and you begin to think about water and how important it is in your life, you begin to realize that there's a water footprint on everything.
Everything. And I have to add to that what I call, it's so hard for me to still get my head around that we live in 2021 and that there are people less than 300 miles away from me that don't have access to clean water. It's very hard for me to get my head around, and I think I live quite consciously. But what I grew up in a house where we had a well, and the well would dry up, and it caused panic for my mom, and that instilled in me a sense of always appreciating water. I always did. And we had to conserve water. She didn't walk away, leaving the faucet running. Long showers were not an option in our family because it was just respect for water. However, fast forward to 2021, most people don't even think about water. It's free. It is the only thing we pay for in our water bills. It's the smallest part of my utility bills. All we pay for is the transportation. We don't pay for the water at all. There's no charge. So I hope that has to change. So here's my question, and I'll get off. That was like a little rant that I just had to get out. But did the pandemic in any way help? Not just, it definitely exacerbated the problem, but did it any way help to accelerate some solutions? When I did my research for the show, it was really tough for me, because I do care. And I was reading about the statistics that you just mentioned, Crystal, about the number of people. And from 2003 to 2013, it was like slower than a turtle. The numbers creeping up, they creep. That's the operative word. And it was up, like, it increased 10%. And I'm like, what is going on here? We live in a country of billionaires and Amazon trucks all over the place. So did the pandemic in any way help put a spotlight on the issue of access to clean water? And I'd like you both to answer that.
Yes, the pandemic has put a light, not the spotlight that we would hope for, on this issue, but definitely a glimmer of light to be able to have people think about water access, thinking about water rights, how those are going, and thinking about infrastructure in general and the access to clean water. It's important that we not only have access to water, but access to clean water means that people can live a healthy lifestyle and be able to not worry about health conditions that can come because they may be drinking water that is not good for them. And as far as resources coming, yes, resources have come in light of the pandemic through the CARES Act funding. Although the funding guidelines associated with that were very limiting to be able to not be a complete solution, especially with how challenging it is for water development in the area. But one of the great things that have come out of this are more partners. I'm really happy to say that we have some amazing partners that have come. Philanthropic organizations, NGOs, federal partners have been thinking about how they can be able to fit within their funding guidelines while still offering a lending hand to the Navajo Nation. So it's been important to be able to be a team together to try and help one another in this time, a very dark time in our history that we can be able to relate to because of the pandemic. On the Navajo Nation, we've lost many family members, many relatives, many friends associated to this pandemic. And it's important to be able to understand how could that have number decreased if there was more accessibility to clean water. Those are things that keep me up at night when I think about that. But in this time of the pandemic, it's been important for me to use this pandemic as a springboard. I know it can be very challenging and just to think about the difficulties the pandemic has brought, but it's important for me to also think about the opportunities that are here with the pandemic, a different state of mind of people thinking and being able to, you know, not only think about themselves, but also to think about other people and how they can help, whether it's making masks for people and sewing them, or whether it's donating a little money here and there to a water-related effort that could help on the Navajo Nation. Those have been very helpful. Or thinking about those on Capitol Hill, policymakers, thinking about the funding guidelines that they have to be able to help the people, American citizens, Native Americans in the United States to be able to fulfill that trust responsibility. We still are not at the full capacity of that trust responsibility. That's why there continues to be the lack of access to clean water, and the number of homes on the Navajo Nation without pipe water is still high, as with other tribal nations throughout the United States.
So there you have it. I mean, the positive things that you see through these things, they just continue to blow my mind. I think we should do another show with the two of you and just call it Resilience. And you can invite some other people to the party. So Nikki, do you want to add to that in terms of, you know, the impact of the pandemic from where you sit, and any positive light? It's not a big spotlight. It seems like it's like a 20-watt bulb or less. So I want to keep positive, everybody.
Yeah. So what I can add to that is it's been a really unique view being in the doctoral program that I'm in now, and having been afforded the opportunity to work alongside some professors and some tribal entities, like with Crystal, who works for the Navajo Nation as a hydrologist. And to see from this academic standpoint, I have not seen such great numbers of people come together at one time, whether you're from academia, whether you're from an NGO, tribal entity, state, federal, the private sector, that at the early onset of the pandemic, it was a round-the-clock kind of response. And what that round-the-clock response really did was bring a different form of unity that I had not seen before. And so I recall at one time being in communication with six other universities. And for me, it was a real nice sense of, I guess, in a way, to feel a form of gratitude to see so many people be interested at just that onset of wanting to try to help with whatever way they could, whether it was donations or whether it was with the knowledge that they have earned through their years of studies or work. And being in this position to see firsthand a lot of these projects unfold from a PhD student perspective has been really awesome to see, and really has begun to create more insight as to creating a platform of meaningful research that could be applied almost simultaneously in a way of working with communities and seeing just how important that research should be directed to consider, in this case, the tribal consultation efforts of really understanding what true tribal consultation is, and that we as outsiders coming from academia weren't coming with solutions, but were more so inclined to listen to the nation itself, the Navajo Nation, and to begin to understand what were their needs and how this collaborative effort could move forward to be able to work, I guess, in a sense, hand in hand in addressing the spotlighted issue while the momentum was so strong.
And it's interesting to me because I was, someone called me and I was prepping for the show, but I haven't heard from him for a while. And I said, Jay, I can't talk long. I'm interviewing two women from the Navajo Nation about water. And I went into it a little bit. And he, I know him through Rotary International. I'm a longtime Rotarian. And he immediately said, I really want to work on getting some significant funding from Rotary because the seventh area of focus for Rotary now is sustainability and the environment. And it's a big deal. And he said, please follow up with me to see what we can make happen. So even that adds to the richness of the conversation. And I don't know if anything will come of it. I know that if Jay can make it happen and we can partner with other Rotary clubs around the country, because he's in California, I'm in Arizona. So to me, that was positive. So let's shift the conversation a little bit. I thought it was very interesting after doing this show for 13 years that a first came up in what were some suggested topics. And I want to honor that because I have never gotten show notes where I was specifically requested or it was put in there to honor someone that made an impact on your lives. And I mean it. I don't want to get super emotional, but it's like, of course they are. They're honoring someone that impacted their journey. And Crystal, I did make a little joke with Nikki that you went to University of Utah. And I'm a Wildcat, but it's okay. I understand now that, especially since your mother went there. But you asked or you talked about the impact that a woman named Dr. Carletta Chief played on the role she played in the positive impact in your lives. And I just, not just to talk about her, but to honor both of you, that it was so significant that you wanted to pay homage to her. So who wants to start with the impact they had on her lives? Crystal, do you want to give that one a shot? And then we'll switch over to Nikki.
Yes, thank you. It's important for me to be able to share. I mentioned earlier that it's important to have a mentor that looks like you and that
right.
You can be able to have similar backgrounds that and what drives you. Dr. Carletta Chief has been an amazing person in my life who has made a great impact on my career path. And I was 17 years old. It was September. And it was a nice evening on the Navajo Nation at the Navajo Nation Fair. I was sitting in the stands with my family at the D&C Jackson Rodeo Arena. And it was about to be the coronation for Miss Navajo. And out coming into the rodeo arena and who became the queen that year was Dr. Carletta Chief. And as her background was described, the degrees she attained from Stanford, it was important for me to be able to understand at that time that you can be a student of the environment. You can be able to gain degrees from a college related to environmental studies. And it was important to me to be able to know that she was a Navajo woman. I was a Navajo woman. She came from the Navajo Nation. She was raised there. She had the same type of teachings and similar that was raised with me. But also the other thing was that she was Twitichitney, meaning Bitterwater Clan. Nikki earlier had described our clan system, and it's a matrilineal way of sharing that genealogy. And I am of the Bitterwater Clan. I am born for the Tengu People Clan. My maternal grandfather's clan is the yucca fruit strung on a line, and my paternal grandfather's clan is the water that flows together. Dr. Chief is Twitichitney, and I'm Twitichitney. She's my sister. And so at that moment, she was my older sister. And fast forward to December 2018, she was on my committee as I defended my PhD on Navajo water and evaluation of the water research in the area throughout the Four Corners region. And now fast forward continuously, 2020, the pandemic, she's been a great partner, being able to use the knowledge that she has to be able to try and answer and help address this issue of water access challenge through the work that she does with a program called Indigifuse that was funded by the National Science Foundation. And she works in Navajo communities to be able to help provide water in that area. And it's important to be able to have that understanding of that water and to be able to know that Dr. Chief has had that great impact on my life. She has been a great mentor, not only for myself, but also for my sister.
So, Nikki, perfect segue, and your sister set it up. Talk about the impact of her being in your life and what it meant to you. And it's just one of those things where it just underlines and highlights the importance of mentoring and have someone to look up to and help open doors and give advice and on and on. So, Nikki, what about your experience with Dr. Carletta Chief, who I am going to get on the show? I can tell you that right now.
Yeah, it would be a really great thing if you did get her on your show. For sure, you would get such a wealth of knowledge and deeper understanding to a lot more of this connection to Navajo and hydrologic topics and different things of that sort. To kind of echo what Crystal has already shared with you, Crystal, her first career choice, I remember her constantly always talking about becoming a marine biologist. And so
from the Navajo Nation to the ocean.
Yeah. So it was a unique kind of choice to want to go into and to study. And I don't know exactly what it was about water, a marine biologist, hearing Dr. Chief was a hydrologist when she became Crown Miss Navajo. And at that point in my life, I wasn't really focusing on the next steps. I was still just focusing on growing up. But what I do remember is that my first recollection of hearing Dr. Chief was in a school gymnasium. And so one of the roles as Miss Navajo, who was once the title that Dr. Chief had had for the Navajo Nation, is to be an ambassador for the Navajo Nation. And one of those tasks are not maybe necessarily a task, but one of the outreach that Miss Navajo does is she goes to visit the kids in the school and do some kind of talk or give some words of encouragement, activities, whatever kind of circumstance of just socializing with the students. And so she came to my school gymnasium and I heard her speak, and I just remembered how thrilled Crystal was telling everybody that Dr. Chief had done something or other studying with water. At the time, I didn't really know the scientific terminology to what it is now that I understand what she does. But what I remember is that just the way she carried herself as a Diné woman really stuck with me. And again, going back to that area of having a role model to look like you and to sound like you and to have those similar life experiences is something that is really priceless, but is one of the most treasured thing a person could actually experience and hold as a form of treasure through friendship. And that's what we have developed with Dr. Chief. And what I'd like to share about her on a personal note of how she has impacted my life directly is that early on in this podcast, you had asked a question of who were your role models or what were some of the hurdles you had to come over or what were some things that might have inhibited you to become a scientist to reach this journey of entering a doctoral program. Well, I can recollect a handful of times where people blatantly said those things that Crystal had already shared of you're never going to make it. You're going to become another statistic of somebody born and raised on the reservation. You'll never make it off. to the point of even a individual who was also someone that we were supposed to look up to, I guess, in a school setting system, to experience hearing those words of, you shouldn't even apply to college because you're not going to get in. And what Dr. Chief did for me is that she essentially made right that wrong. And as a young adult growing up, hearing those words of, you shouldn't even apply to college because you're not going to make it, you're going to become a statistic. You don't really notice early on that that is not something you should be told, that that is an error of words. But now as an adult, I see that that is something that is really something that could be detrimental or hurtful to an individual's life and stopping them from reaching their goals. But I tell you that because years later, after meeting Dr. Chief for the first time, what she did is she erased those words of discouragement from that previous individual and to replace it with her words of encouragement of telling, so this is me on a personal note, so telling me that I deserve to be here, that I deserve to be in this educational system, that I was smart enough, that I was strong enough, that I am going to complete this doctoral program, that anything that you can attribute to being positive in a way of encouragement is what she has shared with me. And now, as Crystal has had her on her committee, I am also fortunate now to have her on my committee alongside my major advisor, Dr. Sharon Megdahl, that I have two excellent women who are guiding me now in this path of reaching this doctoral program. And having Dr. Chief share those words with me to right that wrong that happened so many years before really made a huge impact on my life. And ultimately, she's the reason why I even considered and ultimately came to the University of Arizona.
So I know Sharon, and you're right, she's a champion and noteworthy nationally, internationally, in her own field, in the work of water. Loved having her as a guest on the show. One time we saw each other and she said, Gina, how come I haven't ever been on your show? And I said, I don't know, let's fix that. So we did, and I'm going to look up that podcast. So let's go into, it's kind of like I wanted to come up with a really good crystal ball question without it being too airy-fairy. I just would like each of you to take a minute to share with us, like, going forward, you have big things to accomplish. There's going to, you know, I use the expression miles to go before you sleep. Your futures look pretty busy to me. I know mine's going to be busy till my dying breath of trying to right the wrongs that I see. So what do you see in terms of the joyful part of helping your people and communities when it comes to the area of water resources? What would you like to do to say to me in 5 years, Gina, you're not going to believe what we accomplished, or 2 years or 10 years? What are some of your biggest dreams or your long-term goals to use what you have and all of these resilient components to your lives and your story? What would you like to see happen? So Crystal, let's start with you because you're the oldest. Did you ever hear that one?
Yeah, many times.
I'm sorry. Don't be mad at me.
Well, let's go back, you know, all throughout my undergrad, my master's program, my PhD, my goal, and you can read past scholarship letters and fellowship letters, it was to be where I am today, to be a principal hydrologist with the Navajo Nation Department of Water Resources. And now that I'm here, I have been thinking about that question a lot lately as well. And when I think about the job that I do, I really love the job that I do. It's my dream come true, and many people can attest to that. And for the future, in the next 5 years, many people know throughout Arizona that the Navajo Generating Station closed. That was a big economic driver for not only for the Navajo Nation, but also for the Hopi tribe. And in with the decreased revenue from that economic entity, I've been thinking creatively about how to fund these projects. I've mentioned throughout this podcast the limitations associated with, I mean, why can't we just build it already, right? That's yes. What a lot of people think.
Yes.
But I mean, it takes resources. When you do water development, it takes planning, it takes design, it takes right-of-way, it takes environmental assessment, cultural assessment, it takes construction money. That construction money not only is to for the construction of it, but equipping a well, if that's what you're building, or a well house or pipeline. And what I've been doing is creatively thinking about how to be able to apply for funding. It's been a challenge, but I've had a great experience being able to apply for scholarships and fellowships. I never took out a student loan. It was because of my academic excellence that I was able to apply for many scholarships, and fortunately, I was awarded them. Many people have the misconception that just because you're Native American, you go to college free. That's a lie. That's not true. You have to be able to fund it like anyone else, and I've always been willing to hustle for money for school, and now I'm hustling for money for these water development projects. And yes, I mean, these federal funding opportunities, announcements, they're out there. They're very difficult. The criteria and questions you answer and how these funding opportunities are funded are, you know, very competitive. But that doesn't keep me from not applying. I apply on behalf of a number of projects ever since I started with, so just to let you know, I defended my PhD and 3 days later, I was back working with the Navajo Nation. I didn't even have chance
to go
to China like some of my other colleagues or Hawaii. It was straight to the punch. And with that, I've been straight to the punchline with being able to apply for these opportunities, these federal opportunities, these NGO opportunities, these philanthropic opportunities. And I know sometimes the challenge is thinking about, well, we haven't applied for that before, or, you know, they haven't gave us that money before. But I'm of the opinion that if you work hard, good things will happen. And I've done that throughout my academic career. I continue to do that through my career of working as a principal hydrologist for the Navajo Nation. Water issues are challenging, no matter whether you're talking about how to find money for water infrastructure or we're talking about water rights in the Colorado River Basin. But what I think is there is that we can be able to work hard for what we desire. Maybe we won't get 100% of what we're trying for, but at least we're giving 100% to get where we want to be. And that's what I'm doing for the Navajo Nation.
That's a pretty powerful and impactful answer. And yes. So, Nikki, how do you see you spending your time in the weeks and months to come with your lifelong goal of helping people in your community in this area of water resources?
Yeah, so getting me here has highly been influenced by my parents and my grandmothers, for sure. And I recall a statement that I made to one of my grandmothers that no matter how far I would go and no matter how much I would succeed, that I would always be tied back to our land and our reservation and our community, essentially. As Navajos, we have some cultural practices and customs of some, I guess you might call them protocols, maybe, of where we are connected to the land in a physical way as well. And so I remember those teachings. And oftentimes, Crystal and I get the question posed to us that you're a PhD and you're in STEM and you're looking at these hydroscience topics. Are you aware of how much of income you could earn in the private sector or anywhere off the reservation. Do you have an idea about that? And for Crystal, and I can speak for myself more so, is that money has never been the driver to get us to this level. It has always been on this movement of passion and love and appreciation and gratitude for the area we come from, because that's the land of our people. And it extends even beyond the living human existence. We, as Navajo people, we believe we come from different worlds, and we're all located in that those four sacred mountains. And that's the belief of the Navajo people. And so being tied to a place that strongly for so long is something that essentially runs, as people might say, is like the blood in my veins, is the same DNA as what is found on the landscape with the geology or the plant structure or the stems that make up the leaves and the roots of the trees, that it's the same. And they recognize me and I recognize them. And so that's the main driving factor. So what is the goal of the next 5 years? As you mentioned, Dr. Sharon Megdahl, a lot of her work that has really influenced me currently right now is really under this whole notion of the wicked water problems. And then we just spoke of Dr. Chief, who Crystal had mentioned is a part of this program called an initiative, I guess you could say, Indigifuse, which is the Indigenous Food, Energy, Water, Security, and Sovereignty Nexus. And so I'm a trainee of that group as well in Indigifuse. But I am also in collaborative work with the Howry Foundation at UA, which is working with Tony and Nancy. But not only that, I'm also involved in collaborative work in working with NASA on the drought severity evaluation tool, but also in beginning to look at evapotranspiration. And so from those four different sectors and pillars, I guess you might say, of this doctoral program that I'm in, you can just imagine the variety of possibilities that are being created, either in the field, in the area of Western science, traditional indigenous science, to nonprofit with environmental and social justice issues, to looking at Earth observations with NASA and that kind of data. But how can I use all of this that I'm learning right now and the people I am meeting right now to help the Navajo Nation in their water issues? And so that's the area that I'm focusing on. Just like Crystal thought about creative ways of finding money, I'm thinking of creative ways of how I might use Earth observation to help with finding answers due to the vast, large landscape of our reservation and oftentimes limited resources, either with personnel or funding. How can we use the data that is already out there to help us push us forward to develop further projects in the most efficient and cost-effective way? But also, how might we do this not with the mentality that I, as an academic, am coming home with more knowledge and nothing to have that kind of sense of thinking that I know more, but understanding that you have to respect and understand the knowledge that one has come with to the university. For instance, the knowledge that I have gained from my ancestors and from the land itself on Navajo, and how that has contributed to this education and this education system that I'm in. And so how can I take both of the pre-knowledge and post-knowledge of this academic career that I find myself in to connect all of it, to again focus back on that one relationship of focusing on water topics on Navajo? And so for the next 5 years, as you just had made an estimation of projection, what does that look like? It just looks like, to me, a great opportunity to be creative, to meet the demanding changes that our water system is going to experience, and is going to experience even more so in the decades to come, and in the areas of climate change, global warming, and growing populations, and a depleting finite resource, which is water, that's what it's going to take, is to make the best of what we have and how we can make it better with all that is afforded to us.
So when I have an answer like that, and one with your sister, I usually tell Kelly, who's our show producer, can you put them on the schedule for 5 years from now? Because I plan to be here doing the same thing and do a check-in. We might even want to do it in 2.5 years. So unfortunately, all good things must end. But to me, this is the beginning of a conversation. And I usually ask our guests for a call to action. And I'm going to say what I think it is, and I rarely do that, but it really is a wicked water problem. It's a huge and complex set of issues, a vast array of challenges. So what I'm going to ask of both of you is, in our really great show notes, if you can think of ways, a call to action for our, we have wonderful listeners. They're an engaged audience. If you can come up with either a way to support, there, if there's a nonprofit to be donated to or something, get that information to Kelly and we'll put it in the show notes, unless you both have one at the tip of your tongues, which, you know, you can certainly say it out now, but we always put it in the show notes so that people can refer to it and they're one click away. So do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, definitely.
Yay!
Related to Navajo water, there's NavajoWaterProject.org.
Okay, great.
Which is Dig Deep's effort to help with water, addressing water access challenges in the Navajo Nation.
Dig Deep, I'm having the head of that project, is it George, on our show. I think he's going to be the show after yours, the director of the Dig Deep program. So that's great. We'll put that on there. Nikki, do you have anything? Or are you in alignment with that?
Yeah, I'm in alignment with what Crystal has said.
Great, great. So one of the things I love about this show is that I get to have the last word. It's just a personal thing, probably because of my pecking order in my family. And I really thought a lot about this, and I'm going to do a very short close, and I'm ending with a quote and then a reflection from my heart. If there is magic on this planet, it's contained in water, and attributing that quote to Lauren Isley. And I think it's good for all of us to hold that thought, especially in the context of all you have just heard, and to value and appreciate the magic that is water, because water is life. And then my final words are that during this entire process of researching and reading about Crystal and Nikki and talking to Nancy Peterson from Howry and praising Toni Massaro and all of her work, watching the videos about them, and then this amazing interview, during all of this, I felt and I knew and I fully embraced the obvious. I have been in the presence of greatness, and I am deeply grateful for this entire experience and honored that both of you showed up in my world. I appreciate you and the work you're doing, and your answers were beyond the pale. They were so incredibly impactful for me and my life and my journey. So thank you, both of you, and I hope our paths cross in the after times, as in when we can see each other. I hope that I get to see you. So thank you both for spending this time with me.
Thank you, Gina. It's been great. And thank you, Dave, as well.
Yeah, thank you both. And Gina, that's definitely one of my favorite quotes.
Good quote. Really good quote. So thanks, everybody. Go out there and make a difference.